Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Knowing that ultimately it's God who does the healing, Dr. Medici acts as the maestro, orchestrating a person's health through right timing and right therapies, using traditional, natural, alternative, and spiritual practices. Dr. Medici says it's time for people to wake up to their innate potential to heal and to be given a doctor who can orchestrate that healing. Dr. Medici is currently working toward his PhD in biochemistry at Long Beach University, with additional study in acupuncture, kinesiology, and quantum medicine. He's the curriculum director of the Santa Monica Shiatsu School. And now, here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. Good morning to you all. Happy Easter weekend. I'm going to do a show today, packed with science. It's going to have a lot of theological, philosophical, metaphysical attachments to it. We're going to discuss, well, here's today's show, the title of the show, Healing Disease and the Suffering of Christ. DMT explored as the link between the two. That is a mouthful. Healing Disease and the Suffering of Christ. DMT, that's dimethyltryptamine, explored as the link between the two. What is that about? Well, I was raised Roman Catholic. I went to St. Robert Bellarmine Grammar School. I went to Archbishop Molloy High School. St. Robert Bellarmine was ordained saint. Of course, if you know history, after he had Giordano Bruno executed for not recanting his notion that the sun, not the earth, was the center of the solar system. That was St. Robert Bellarmine doing the thing that, well, in the Middle Ages, probably the Vatican admits today, they did a little bit too more aggressively, imprisoning Galileo, but nothing more than the belief that he had to shed light and illuminate the world by saying that the sun, not the earth, was the center of the solar system. Bruno had his head cut off. Bellarmine was ordained a saint. I was raised strict Roman Catholic. I was educated by the Jesuits, I am proud to say. I got a wonderful educate by the Society of Jesuits. And to this day, if I ever do donate, it will be to the Jesuits for what they represented. But I was not a practicing Catholic. I became born again as an evolution. And this is where the show really begins. I became born again as an evolution in response to working with people who were suffering. We talk about healing disease today, the day before Easter, Holy Saturday, after Good Friday, after Thursday, the agony in the garden. We talk about healing disease, but what in all practicality, after you study all the science and get all the clinical experience, really what it comes down to, largely for people who have chronic disease, illness, symptoms, health grievances, is how they suffer. How do you understand your suffering? Do you curse God because you suffer? Do you feel left out? Everybody goes through these moments when things get heavy. Now, as a practicing clinician over 25 years, you see a lot of things. A lot of things you don't feel capable of dealing with. How do you deal with people who suffer? Well, things I can't and won't mention on the radio. I don't want to ruin your day. How do you deal with that as a clinician? Well, one thing you do is you evolve a philosophy of it. You look for its relationship to the healing. You search for the links between the two. And that's how I became born again. It was an illumination based upon the pain of sharing a lot of suffering with a lot of people for a long time. Because we celebrate the man tomorrow, the God tomorrow, who suffered and who transcended his suffering And that is what we call the resurrection with all its implications now over 2,000 years later. Now, on my end of the stick are people who sit across my desk each day, each week, that have had very, very aggressive, ugly, life-changing wake-up calls. You wake up blind. You wake up, you can't move. You wake up with growths in your body that can be fatal. You wake up, be told your immune system is eating pieces of you. That's heavy stuff. I'm not a divorce attorney. I'm not an investment banker. I sit across, and I love applying the science, as you well know, as much as I can. That's my, well, first and foremost calling, I think. I get excited about the science, but I've never been able to get around that the person across the desk who suffers the disease, the symptom, is going to have to embrace the pain. More easily said than done, admittedly. But you got to do it. And if you don't, you don't heal. Now, that's amazing to me. It's ironic. I don't have enough descriptive words that could do that reality justice. That with all the science stuffed into all the skyscrapers of all the scientific knowledge in the world, the bottom line is, if you can't embrace the suffering, you don't heal. Now, of course, that's all part of the autonomic nervous system. I don't want to get too much in that today. Of course, embracing the suffering, well, we celebrate the life of a person named Christ, Jesus Christ, who certainly had his work cut out for him. And for those of you who at times don't like talking about the Christ as man, well, I'm going to do that today, keeping in mind that, of course, Jesus was God. And you have to hold that dichotomy. If you lose the man Christ, it's tougher to relate to. What does the man Christ have to tell you tomorrow morning on your way to work, in your pain, in your suffering, in your fear, and in your misery, or hatred, or resentment, or grief, or sadness? So to me, as a Christian, as a practicing clinician, I have to ask myself why we suffer, thus the show today. Picture number one, if you're new to the show, I'm Dr. Vincent Medici, straighttalk.cc, not .com. That's with two T's. Take a look at the pictures. As always, they say 1,000 words. Picture number one. We celebrated or absorbed or meditated upon that picture Thursday, right? That's the agony in the garden. That's when, well, Jesus still had a choice, right? Why did I have to get this brain tumor? Why did I wake up crippled one day and they told me I had sclerosis, multiple sclerosis? Why are my immune system cells eating out my collagen or my joints, and they've told me I have lupus? Why is that back pain not going away? It's been 10 years. Why can't I heal the infections in my teeth? Why am I 40 years old and someone told me you look 60? And honestly, I agree with them. You do look 60. Why did I age so fast? What can I do about it? Why does everybody else get to eat what they want and I don't? Why do I have all this stress and everybody else seems to get off scot-free? You realize, of course, my audience, that's the illusion. People are crazy. People, when they're sick, they're crazy. We're all crazy. People, when they're sick, they're really crazy. And one of the things they deceive themselves about is they think they're the only person that suffers. When all you have is pain to remind you of your day, you tend to get very self-centered. Doctors, clinicians, healers, counselors, therapists, priests, rabbis have to remember that. People in pain are focused on their pain. Well, that is, of course, the problem. Picture number one is Jesus in the garden. He's asking himself, no doubt, how is he going to do this? He knows, being prophetic, being God, being paranormal, he knows he's about to be tortured. We don't know how bad those tortures actually were, do we? There's a range of thought about that. But at least we have to settle for nails, being punched through your limbs, asphyxiation by crucifixion, stones, hard rocks being thrown at your face. I mean, the historians just talk about the culture of the day. What would you do with a thief or a child molester or whatever? Well, Jesus got no less and probably more. So being paraphysiological, he knew he was on his way to a horrid torture. And of course, because he was Jesus, because he was God, he could have denied himself that. He could have gotten out of it. Now, there's the man in him in that agony, right? One might say, well, he was God. He knew he was going to resurrect, and he knew his message would be heard. The consciousness of the world would change henceforth. He knew that, and he knew he would ascend to heaven. So what is he sweating in that agony? Well, see, that's, of course, the point, right? I hope I'm not telling you anything you don't know on that matter. He suffered that night, like we suffer, like you suffer. Most people, in my experience, when they get sick, it's 2 years before they even embrace the suffering. So I'm going to ram this one down your throat today in that way that sometimes you don't like. Well, that's tough. All too often, I mean, almost all the time. And again, it's understandable, but you can't do it. You can't do it. It's so easy to do, to have that temper tantrum. I mean, theoretically, Jesus did it in a night. How many people I've seen, it takes a year, 2 years, 3 years. I watch people, and I am not kidding, spend their whole life having a temper tantrum about their suffering. It never ends. The suffering in the poor me. Make no mistake about it. Had Jesus not embraced his suffering, had not turned it into a higher power, had not employed or deployed physiological systems manifest in all of us, inherent in all of us, to transcend his suffering, there would have been no ascension. Rest assured. Let's not make this resurrection thing, this ascension thing, some Santa Claus story. You know, there is no Santa Claus, right? But there was a resurrection, and there was someone named Jesus, and he did suffer horribly, and he did come back in flesh. Not an apparition or a ghost, but in flesh. That's a tough act to follow. He must have been doing something. I can guarantee you, and this is the relevance to you with your symptom, with your disease, he embraced his suffering. That is the agony in the garden. That's the better side of it. Love that picture there, number one. Look at picture number two. There. That's another version of the agony in the garden. He's embracing his suffering. And, of course, who's on their way down? The angel. Look at picture number one. What is around his head? A halo. Do you think people put halos around the Christian saints, around Jesus, because it looked cool? Or did it mean something? Could it mean that there was a physiological phenomenon going on? Could it mean that Jesus was lit up? Because he came here lit up. Could it be that his suffering was part of the process through which he lit up even further? When was the last time you, when you weren't having a temper tantrum about your pain and your suffering, when you weren't running around saying, those darn doctors, they don't know what they're doing. When was the last time screaming you spent all this money and no one's given you any answers? When was the last time secretly underneath it all you were so darn annoyed because you suffer but your brother or your sister or your neighbors or your friends don't? You got to get real on that. Today is not the day to deny yourself that. Well, you see, your head's not lit up. It's not. You have been creatively destroyed or suppressed or imploded or denied. And those physiological systems that we're going to get to later on, DMT, dimethyltryptamine, being one of those chemicals manifest out of the physiology, prevent you in your chronic symptomology from finding God, from embracing your suffering, from bringing your notion and your Christian faith into your being to change the course of your disease. You learn a lot of things in the trenches with people. You really do. You learn a lot of things. You learn what counts. You learn what counts in war. You learn what counts when you deal with serious stuff. And that night in the garden, what counted is that Jesus found a way to turn his suffering into a virtue and depended upon mechanisms inherent in him, inherent in all of us. Are we not made in his image? We're going to get to those mechanisms and those chemicals. You really got to take that in because it is the foundation, one of the foundations for your faith. Woe to you if your faith goes no deeper than your head. If it's not in your being, it doesn't work. And picture number three. Look at picture number three. There he is, strung out. Who's the angel? When was the last time somebody with wings and long hair was petting your head in your emptiness, in your loneliness, in your sense of abandonment and betrayal, in your physical pain, in your mortal terror? Well, there's probably one person out there that's going to email later on. Oh, I know what that's about. I do it every day. I hope so. I hope you do. I want you to consider that that angel is real. I want you to consider that Jesus connected to it. That the man in him, propelled by the God in him, was capable of initiating physiological mechanisms to create relationship with the heavens. That is the definition of faith. Think about that. That did not prevent the crucifixion, of course. Picture number five. There he is. There's the crucifixion. An artist's rendition. That's not the Middle Ages. That's a little later. The Middle Ages just have those two-dimensional pictures. There was a nun there on the left. Maybe not. I don't know. I'm going over my head. I only know Jesus is in the center there, and there's a lamb to the left of his foot. There he is. He's on the cross. Some of you might think that's the easier part of the suffering. It doesn't hurt as much when it's happening. It hurts when you're thinking about it. Either way, the crucifixion. Picture number six, another version of the crucifixion. There's that halo over the head, buffering that crown of thorns, buffering those nails. You ever study crucifixion? I mean, it was a common thing back then. Extraordinarily painful. Even worse when you were crucified upside down. I think that was Thomas's fate, Doubting Thomas. I think I could be wrong. That occurred in India. picture 7. I don't know about you. That one hits me. That one hits me. You feel like that sometimes. I've stayed up all night and held people dying of cancer. Held them in my arms, looked into their face. While they've asked me to pull the trigger, metaphorically. Told me they don't want to be here. With the cancer in every bone in their body, their brain, their ribs, their spine. I've been very close to that quite a few times. They look like that. And they don't have a crown of thorns in their head, but metaphorically they do. Here's picture 8. That's Salvador Dali's version. That's another angle. Dark days, right? It's not like he's doing that and he's clapping. It's not like he's doing that or the night before, bellowing out musical tunes, knowing he's going to ascend and come back as flesh. What is the mindset in that moment? What is the mindset when the doctor tells you you have a chronic progressive terminal disease? Right? Shock. I watch it all the time. People go into shock. They don't even want to look at it. It's understandable, right? And then they move out of shock into depression, into rage. Striking out at all the people who cause them grief and pain, the kids, the husband, the wife, the relatives, the mother, the father, the society, the world. Darn doctors, don't know, missed it. Not just cancer, everything. I've seen as many people that want to kill themselves from chronic debilitating back pain as cancer. At least with cancer, there's a way out. People of faith say, so what? I'm dead soon. It's better to be with the Father in heaven. Lots of people don't even have that out. They're locked in to day-to-day relentless pain. It doesn't stop. Picture 7, picture 8. And then that great day. Then that great day. Picture 9, picture 10. Picture 11. Picture 12. The ascension. The resurrection. And the return. Picture 12. Look at picture 12. It's picture 12. That's Magdalene. Is that Mary Magdalene, right? Mary Magdalene is stunned, ostensibly, but perhaps she kind of knew. Wasn't she told? Not sure. But he came back. He came back as flesh. The miracle occurred. Now, there's continuity there. You've got to look at the continuity. There's the suffering. There's the actual act of pain, enduring the pain and transfiguring that into something paranormal, something godly. Not ethereal, because he's come back in the flesh. That's the meaning of that word. That's the meaning of that picture. He has come back in the flesh. What did Magdalene have to do with that? Was she a poor, lonely prostitute who he just gave pity to? I'm not buying that one. Something about Magdalene that's a lot bigger than we know. I don't know what it is, but I do know just a poor prostitute that loved Christ and that he granted his salvation to. That sounds like Santa Claus to me. I think we should all look deeper. picture 9, I believe that's Rembrandt. That's Rembrandt. 15, 1600s. Picture 10, that's Raphael. That is his depiction. See how that's more two-dimensional? Right? The older painters used less perspective. It was Michelangelo who brought us that more three-dimensional perspective, or one of the people that did. Either way, something happened. What happened? What does it have to do with suffering? What can happen to you? Can you transcend your pain? Can you heal your disease? Are you not born in the image of Christ? Are you Christian? And do you accept that you have that power? Then why has it been 10 to 20 years? Because we're human. And we have to forgive ourselves, right? But there really is something going on here. Now, the reason I love to come from this angle is we have now probably in the most perilous time in human history, possibly on the brink of revelation. I mean, come on, another 200 years like this? What are we not going to see in the course of the next 200 years? What? Probably at the most perilous time, wouldn't it oblige us to celebrate tomorrow in a functional way, a functional way, in a way that empowers us, not some fairy tale, not some fairy tale, in a functional way? That functional way being what? That there was something, or is something, inherent with us that we can begin to activate, that we already have proofs of, that can bend normal biochemistry, that the normal biochemical limitation within the cell can be bent. The same way time can be bent, the same way quantum mechanics tells us that many of the physical laws are not immutable, that they can transfigure, that the laws don't apply in certain situations. I submit to you, this is what we celebrate tomorrow. And of course, there's Kaiser Permanente. Let's go to picture 13. There, with his finger stuck in Jesus' rib. Doubting Thomas. Doubting Thomas. I'm getting a word here that my voice is breaking up. I've had a couple of people tell me, if that's the case, a message to K-Bright, if that's the case, could be a false alarm. People sometimes send us messages, and it's just because their computers aren't transmitting. There it is, picture 13. That's Kaiser Permanente. They don't believe it. It's right in front of their face. They don't believe it. Ever gone to a medical doctor and said, you know, a friend of mine, they healed something they weren't supposed to heal? I've seen this. I've seen this regularly over 20 years. I've seen it with terminal cancer. I've seen tumors disappear. And medical doctors look at it and go, oh, statistically, that's not significant. That's how bad it is. You want to know where the devil lives? When people see proof of God and walk the other way. That's the devil. There, that's Caravaggio's Doubting Thomas. That's Caravaggio's Doubting Thomas. Doubting Thomas never believed, even when he stuck his finger in. I think Doubting Thomas ended up in India. I think something wonderful overcame him. I think he was crucified upside down. Whatever it takes. Lots of people doubt. I don't understand. How can people be part of standard allopathic perspective and call themselves Christians. I don't understand that. Now, that's a big statement. So I'm not going to push that statement. But people should think about that statement. Because if you're looking for God, you have no further to look than inside yourself. We have been given mechanisms within ourselves. Picture 17, the pineal gland. Picture 22, the hypothalamus and the pituitary. Picture 24, the ventricular system. 28, the ventricular system. This whole show is about DMT, dimethyltryptamine, the spirit molecule. We've isolated the chemical. We know what they do. We don't know how they do it. We can repeat it. There's much research behind it. And that God connection, that ability to see something outside yourself, a grander vision than gross mortality. Mrs. Smith, you have a chronic progressive debilitating disease. Take the drugs and simply wilt on off into the future in a rocking chair. Enjoy yourself. We love you. But there's really nothing you can do. Did you take your meds today? This is what people buy into. They buy into it pharmacologically. They buy into it holistically. I went to the chiropractor. I went to the acupuncturist. I tried the nutritionist. It's all out of bunko. And they've only done that after they've seen 50 medical doctors. And by the time they're 60, they sit on the couch and that's it. They give up. You give up with things inside yourself like the pineal gland, like the ventricular system, like the cerebral spinal fluid, like the cranial system, like dimethyltryptamine. Dimethyltryptamine. Sometime today, tomorrow, those of you who have the subscription, give that show up top, DMT, the spirit molecule. Fascinating stuff. Two chemicals in the body we make. One is called dynorphin. Like endorphin, it's called dynorphin. Dynorphin has 200 times the power of morphine. It's 200 times stronger than morphine. We make it. We make it. It's one of the opiates. The opiates. The opiates and the opiates. If there's one area that the future of medicine should consume, it's the opiates. Picture number 40, Candace Pert, was actually doing that. Unfortunately, we just lost her. Just like we lost Nick Gonzalez. There she is, Candace Pert. Molecules of Emotion, picture number 38. Molecules of Emotion. Statements like 39. Most shrinks treat the mind as disembodied. Note she says psychologists. She doesn't say psychiatrists. She says psychologists, people that do counseling, people that do therapy, talk to the mind and treat it as disembodied to the physical body. Conversely, those at Kaiser, physicians, treat the body with no regard to mind. So let's get real. You have autoimmune disease, you have cancer. When was the time, last time the MD said, this has been driven by your emotional body? That's what she means. She means we don't hear that. She means we should hear that. She means it's stupid that we don't hear that. She means it's stupid that you don't deal with that. Okay, I don't want to be philosophical. I want to be functional and practical. Because this is what's going on in the trenches every day. People get symptoms. People get diseases. They're not looking to their emotional body. And if they're not, they're never going to find out what they might engage to do something about it. Pert gave her life. And she literally gave her life. She literally gave her life to this connection between mind and body. And so she's saying, the body and mind are not separate. We cannot treat one without treating the other. Now, that means a lot in the practice of it. It means a lot for you in the practice of it. And if you nod your head because you've heard this before, or if you shake your head because you disagree, or if you're not doing anything with your head because you've never heard any of it, let me assure you that to make this functional is an evolution. That you have to attach to that statement more and more and more deeply so that it means something. It means something functional where the rubber meets the road. And that's Candace Pert. There's Pert, picture 41, getting ripped off by Solomon Schneider. She discovered the opiate receptors. She got no credit for it. She was working for Schneider. Schneider, like every good mentor, gave him and his friends the credit. She got nothing. Respect under the table, but not the type of credit she should have gotten. That's the game. She wrote the book Molecules of Emotion, saying about the same thing. And then she started going into the groovy circuit with Deepak Chopra and the whole club of intellectuals who were pushing the limits of the normal boundaries of medicine. As Christians, we celebrate a man, a God, who did very much that. I find this, as a doctor, a very important way to look at what we celebrate tomorrow. And of course, over the years, our stars agree. Bruce Lee agreed. Picture 42. If you always put limits on everything, I can't get out of pain. I can't heal my cancer. My doctor said this is chronic and progressive and that I should simply live with it. If you always put limits on everything you do, physical or anything else, I'm too old to go back to school. I'm too old to have true love. I'm too old after a marriage or two to find out what it's really about. It will spread into your work and into your life. There are no limits. There are only plateaus. And you must not stay there. You must go beyond them. Bruce Lee, to many, was a hero. Picture 45, Yoda. Yoda is a hero. This is the hero's journey. Joseph Campbell. What does the hero do? Christ is your hero. He is a hero, among other things. He's a hero. But what does a hero do? They come in ahead of the curve. They suffer because they can see so much. They falter and fail and are tested as humans. And they embrace that suffering to get to the other side, to reorganize themselves neurologically so they can have the God experience. And in that way, we are all like Christ. Now, admittedly, he went further than that. But wouldn't that be enough for you? To transcend your suffering, to have the God experience, to get healthy, to melt the tumor, to burn out the autoimmune disease, to get rid of the chronic infection. That would satisfy you. We are all here to become heroes. We're all here to liberate ourselves from our suffering. We're all here to learn what we have to learn. And that's what your symptom is. Your disease is simply something tickling or stabbing you and prompting you to learn what you came here to learn. And in that respect, it has to be embraced. People could just understand that. If people could just understand that. If people could just understand that. But part of being human, of course, is picture 13 and 14. Go back to 14, blow it up, take a look at it. There's Doubting Thomas. If people could just learn that you suffer because you have to learn something, and that on the other side of that is heaven. But people are like Doubting Thomas. Our institutions are like Doubting Thomas. What we call science is like Doubting Thomas, not in my book. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. No doubt the rest of my life is about showing you that the science you think is science is not science. It is time to turn science upside down. It is time to liberate science from its own chains. Truly. DMT, the spirit molecule. See that video. Okay, let's take a look at DMT. It's produced in the pineal gland. Picture 26. There's picture 26. You see those four little pillows up there on top, just below the hole? Looks kind of phallic. Looks kind of erotic. Looks kind of genital. You have a vaginal canal. You've got a penis. You've got four breasts. Yeah, all neuroanatomists think that. They do. I didn't make that up, and I'm not being cute. But when you look at parts of the brain, you can't help but think it. Now look at that. That's an angle on part of the brain. That little nipple-like projection there in the center between the two pillows, the two breasts, that is the pineal gland. Some of you have seen this picture many times. That's where your DMT secretes from. That's where your melatonin secretes from. That's where fluorine collects to destroy the sanctity. That's where you have calcite crystals. That's where, if the frequencies of the ventricular system get to a pitch, that little nipple bangs its head against both sides of those breasts and ejaculates something rather special into your bloodstream. Could be DMT. Well, what's DMT? DMT, dimethyltryptamine, we know that when it secretes, you have the God experience. You lose awareness of self. You become supremely benevolent. It is an endorphin rush beyond an endorphin rush. It's like when you fell in love. It's like when you realized for the first time in your life that you were in love. You fell in love and there was explosion. You didn't know where you were. There was no sense of you. There was only the pleasure of it. That's what you feel when DMT releases. Now, anybody somewhat versed in DMT knows that there are drugs that have DMT in them. Plants. Go to picture number 30. DMT, or dimethyltryptamine, is a chemical compound found in the mammalian brain in the pineal gland. It is also in plants. The most common source is the root bark of Mimosa hostilis. Yes, mimosa. That's on Sundays with champagne and orange juice. Mimosa hostilis. Hostilis. Who knows? Point is, DMT is in ayahuasca. DMT is in a lot of things. DMT is illegal. DMT is a sacred plant in other countries. The point is, we make it. What interests me are not expeditions to Peru to do ayahuasca. What interests me, what I suggest should interest you, is that we make it. We make it. Could it be that Christ knew how to make more of it? Could it be? Could it be that we are alike in his image? Because we make it, and we could make more of it. Are we not replacing science or God with science when we think that What we're going to do is manufacture it and inject it into people, addict them to it. See the point? The God chemicals we make, your symptom, your disease, your chronic problem is failure to thrive, promoting the concentration and promoting the increased abundance of those chemicals. Your physiology, the biology of your cell, is limited to what you can produce, which is nothing different than your creative explosion. You there, in symptomology, in disease, have been creatively destroyed. Not completely, significantly enough. Something didn't happen. The dream didn't come true. You suffer under the weight of the rage against heaven because your dreams didn't come true. That's how people get sick. All the science in the world will not replace that. And then we manufacture Prozac and every other blessed drug that we make, and we rationalize the administration because people will kill themselves otherwise and we have to save them. But we addict them to these things forevermore. When we produce these things endogenously, how though? Why do I even have to do this show? It's nothing I'm saying today that's new. Everyone's known. We make our own DMT. We make our own serotonin. We make our own dopamine. We make our own happy chemicals. So why, in fact, do I even have to talk like this today? Because something's not functional about the perspective, because this is nothing more, usually, than la-la talk in coffee rooms at Starbucks in Santa Monica and more esoterically derived communities. But when it comes to paying the bills, when it comes to making the relationship choices, when it comes to bringing this wisdom to your disease, this is when it falls apart, and I will tell you why. Methodology. We do not have methodology. We have fractionated, isolated, unrelated pieces of a framework and no coherence. Thus, my show. Now, you understand why I do the show. This show will never be a mass consciousness show. It wasn't designed that way. It's for people who have enough depth, enough spiritual depth, enough IQ power to understand how to make important concepts coherent and functional, without which all this stuff is just a lot of hooey, and it doesn't mean a lot. We'll forever be enslaved going to our holistic practitioners, but when the big day comes and we find out we're truly sick, off to Kaiser and the knife. And that's what I see. That's what I see. Mind you, I say it as gently as I can. But that's the truth. So I know what I'm going to celebrate tomorrow. You celebrate what you want. We can all celebrate our version of it. I like the functional version of it. I like the functional version of it. This is functional. Let's go to picture 32. Picture 32. DMT belongs to the tryptamines, which are a specific class of chemicals. Some tryptamines are vital parts of your normal brain function. Serotonin, melatonin, LSD, ayahuasca. You see? Out there, running around in all sorts of shapes, are things very similar to DMT. DMT, well, that's the granddaddy. DMT is the granddaddy. When the DMT gets secreted, we say we have the death experience, you know, where people die, but then they come back. That's the DMT experience. Read those accounts. They're not wacko accounts. They're very authenticated accounts. They're very, very, validated. They're very trustworthy. People have these near-death experiences, and then they come back and they say, my life will forever be altered. I've seen things. I've seen things I didn't know was there. And their choices from that day on are very, very different. And no one thinks they're crazy, you see, because they've paid their dues. They've been pronounced dead in some hospital room, and they come back. Nobody argues with that. It's a great example, you know. You can say you healed your disease and no one will believe you. They won't. I'm telling you, they won't. Even your own family will think you were malingering in the first place. Even if you heal your cancer, you'll be told it was just a coincidence. Sometimes, Mrs. Smith, these cancers just go away. There isn't anything you did. It was lotto. It's a miracle. But it's nothing that you did to empower yourself. That is what you will be told by the devil. The devil comes in very inconspicuous ways, or it wouldn't be the devil. Think about that. DMT, like serotonin, like melatonin. Picture 29. Serotonin, DMT, psilocybin, the one. Psilocin, that's psilocybin, as in mushrooms. Picture 33. DMT is the chemical that elicits dreams. DMT plays an important role in the process of thought, near-death experience, as well as meditation. Now we get to meditation. What does meditation have to do with you? That's not meditation. You mean like that transcendental meditation, that alien stuff? Look at picture number one. He's meditating. He's not vacant. He is not vacant. Good Presbyterian said to me one day, the difference between certain forms of meditation and prayer, in that they're both forms of meditation, is that prayer, real prayer, fills the mind. It fills the mind with the connection. I really liked that slant on it. Jesus is meditating. I wonder if in that agony, he figured out how to fill himself with DMT, thus the light around his head, thus the manifestation of the angel. I wonder. Picture number 35. DMT is a hallucinogen. DMT is inactive orally without the aid of a monoamine oxidase inhibitor drug, as the enzyme is taken too quickly for any notice to be infected. It can be used as a drug, but we make it ourselves. That's what I'm interested in. Picture 37, first isolated in 46. This has been understood, at least chemically, since World War II. But the shamans of South America have understood it many, many hundreds, thousands of years earlier than that. I would submit to you that without isolating it and knowing it, man, from the beginning of recorded time, whether you see that biblically or otherwise, has been looking for ways to increase its function. If you don't believe me, well, just talk to Yoda, picture 45. If you don't believe me, listen to Gilbram, picture 46. Out of suffering have emerged the strongest souls. The most massive characters are seared with scars. Didn't he have a way with words? Gilbran, if that's how you say his name, and Rumi. Beautiful poets. 48, I had to conquer hell to reach nirvana. All people understand this on some level. Picture 49, and this is what charges me. If God sends you many sufferings, it's a sign that he has great plans for you and certainly wants to make you a saint. That's Ignatius Loyola. anyone know the story of Loyola? I certainly do. He concluded his life asking us all to go forth and set the world on fire. 714-850-1007. 714-850-1007. If you have issues and need guidance, 714-850-1007. We will counsel you to the reality of what it takes to get on the other side of your pain, your health concern, so that you can go forth and set the world on fire. See you next week. Happy Easter.
You've been listening to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Invite your family and friends to the show and learn about Dr. Medici through his website, straighttalk.cc. He'll give you the tools you need to save your health and prevent unnecessary surgeries and harmful drugs. He's dedicated to your ultimate healing. Join Dr. Medici next week at 10 a.m. for more Straight Talk on Health. This show and the information therein has not been evaluated by the FDA, and recommended products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. The information provided on this site is for informational purposes only and is not intended as a substitute for advice from your physician or other healthcare professional.